This is Designing Transition, a bilingual podcast about designing for systems level change toward more sustainable and equitable futures. It is also a podcast about the transitions design is taking in practice when it's concerned with the complex and interconnected challenges societies face today. Today's conversation is in English. We will now direct our Spanish-speaking listeners to the commentary in Spanish. La conversación de hoy es en inglés. Te invitamos a escuchar nuestra discusión en español acerca de esta al final del episodio.
Michael Jones is a renowned multidisciplinary researcher of place. He is a creative facilitator, speaker, writer, and pianist. His book, The Soul of Place, is a window into the ways we can define and relate to our positioning on Earth and with our communities, taking into consideration how we lead. It's an especially important episode because Michael is reflecting from the stage of being an elder on the journey. His words are especially poignant given his lifelong journey and deep winter reflections.
Michael Jones es un renombrado investigador multidisciplinario del concepto de la localidad. Es un facilitador creativo, orador, escritor y pianista. En esta entrevista, Michael nos dio una descripción general de su larga carrera, el trabajo que ha hecho con las comunidades nativas e indígenas en Canadá y su relación con la biorregión. Su libro, The Soul of Place, es una ventana a formas alternativas en las que podemos definir y relacionarnos con nuestro posicionamiento en la tierra y con nuestras comunidades, teniendo en cuenta cómo ser líderes responsables. Es un episodio especialmente importante porque Michael reflexiona desde la última etapa del viaje como persona mayor. Sus consideraciones son especialmente conmovedoras dado su largo trayecto y su profundo discurrir invernal. Esperamos que este lindo episodio con Michael les guste. Encontrarán una síntesis en español de nuestra charla con Michael por parte de Silvana y Alex al final de la entrevista.
To give some context, Michael and I met at Schumacher College in Southern England, I think about 5 years ago, maybe longer, but yeah, somewhere around 4 to 5 years ago. And I had a chance to really get to know him at that moment, and then later at Wasson Island, where he was leading a workshop on the soul of place and thinking about how our own essence connects with the essence of a specific place that we're connected to or placed within, and how that knowledge of the essence of a place or the soul of a place can be carried through our work. But I'll let Michael talk about his work. I thought, just to give that context, I've been, you know, really following his work and been considering him a mentor and an elder to my work throughout the last few years since we've met. Could you describe a little bit about what kind of work have you been up to in your lifetime?
That's a good question. I think it starts from the sense that I'm a musician and a pianist and a composer and an improviser. And so I look at the world, I look through that lens and the idea of how things move in harmony with one another or move in correspondence. And so I became intrigued by physical design, architecture and design from that perspective, around how you bring music into the built environment. And I think the way you create music in the built environment is through conversation. This conversation is really how we enter into a musical landscape through words. So we've been working here in our community because we have millions of dollars of new development happening, some of it along the waterfront, some of it downtown, and concentrated in one particular part of the community. And we've been wanting to ensure that there's a sense of place in a way that there's a place for conversation, that you think of the built environment as being part of a larger commons, as a place to meet, a place to congregate, so that the community feels included in the development and not excluded. And I think what helps us move in that direction is because we have quite a significant influence on the part of an indigenous community just across the lake from where our town is or our city. And for indigenous communities, it's all about land and it's all about place. And from their perspective, and this goes back 5,000 years, this has always been a a meeting place because it's the confluence between two lakes, and there's a narrows that joins them. And the narrows, the water is always moving. And so the narrows doesn't freeze during the winter. And so it's a place where you can find fish. And they put fish weirs in here underwater 5,000 years ago, and they're still there. And it's a place that they thought of as a place to meet. And so when they spoke at 10,000 braves gathering on the shores of Lake Coochiching in March, they came from all the, from throughout the northeast of the continent. They came not just for fish, but to tap into the creative spirit that flowed through those narrows. And so this is, place has always had a history, a story about itself that had to do with meeting and coming together.
Can you describe a little bit about, just for the listeners of this podcast, where you are at when you talk about this place?
Oh, in terms of our physical coordinates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm speaking about Aurelia is the town. And it's right between two lakes, Lake Simcoe to the south and Lake Coochiching to the north. The lakes are quite different. Lake Simcoe is about 30 miles wide and very deep. And Lake Coochiching is a long finger lake. It's about 14 miles long and very shallow. It's only about 15 or 20 feet deep, I think, at its deepest point. And so Lake Coochiching, which is Ojibwe for Lake of Many Winds, because it's so shallow, has many different moods. So there's a lot of language that's associated with the lake.
I know it's so beautiful to hear you speak about the place more from its indigenous roots, which isn't obviously as common as it ought to be, I suppose. And when we speak of place, just to tie in a little bit, you wrote a book called The Soul of Place. Maybe for our listeners, you could kind of describe what that means when you speak about place and a little bit about your work in authoring The Soul of Place, so that listeners might take it upon themselves to follow that process that you outlined, or I guess narrative that you outlined in your book.
Sure, yeah. The Soul of Place was really to reacquaint us with the significance of place and the role of place in our lives. And living a more soulful life, it's in harmony and congruence with the place we find ourselves. We're such a mobile society that I think for many, place doesn't factor in very much. It's not something we consider. Yet I think we suffer for the absence of place and the absence of the kind of grounding it offers and the kind of sense of at-homeness that comes with being deeply connected with the place you find yourself. So there are four portals that I explored as a kind of a map for thinking and talking about place, one of them being homecoming, the sense of growing down and into a place. We spent a lot of our time growing up, climbing the ladder of success, elevating ourselves. And place kind of takes us in a different direction. Invites us to grow down, to connect with the soil and with the ground we stand on each day. And so that's one portal to think about. The second is belonging. It has to do with community and the patterns of connection that we have with the world around us that sort of help us feel ourselves to be in place. And a third is regenerativity. It represents the conscious evolution of life. And now we bring the invisible into the visible so that it can be more clearly seen. I think we talk a lot about sustainability, but I think regenerativity is really focused more around how we not only try to do the best we can with what we have left, but how we create anew and bring newness, new freshness into whatever we're doing. And the fourth is transformative celebration. The sense of ritual, of ceremony, of celebration and rejoicing in all of the abundance of what we have. So the book kind of explores place through those four portals or lenses.
It's so interesting at this moment during COVID to really think about the role of place now as we become perhaps more sedentary in many ways, but also more virtually connected. So I thought maybe just as a follow-up on that is just to be very curious to hear how you are conceiving of the way in which place is changing, maybe even through this era. And also, as I think the role of celebration is one that I think is often forgot. We just tend to kind of think of everything, at least a lot in transition design, as kind of an uphill battle or a complex work that, you know, it's really hard to see the wins, the small wins, or the find reason to celebrate, because we always feel we have so much more to do. So it's a bit of a two-parter question there for you, Michael, but just thought I'd get your thought, you know, we'd get your thoughts on place in the time of COVID and how we celebrate when there's so much turbulence going on around us.
Well, if there's one gift that may have come from COVID, is that it's brought us home. It feels like it was a call home. I mean, planes were literally turning around mid-flight and going back to their points of departure. Canada, like other countries, I think, was sending planes around the world to gather up Canadians who were stranded in various parts of the globe and to bring them home. And so I think of, there's one dimension, I think, of the, you know, so much tragedy that's a part of the pandemic, but there's also the sense is a renewed focus on, for many, on a more contemplative time, sort of think anew about what you really want from your life and from who you are and what changes you might want to envision. One of the things I've learned working with Native storytellers is that they say there are two kinds of stories. There are animate stories and there are inanimate stories. And animate stories are living stories. And animate story, when they're telling an animate story, everything is alive. The trees, the rocks, the animals, they all have a living presence. And inanimate stories, everything is dead except the human beings. And so when you're regenerating native languages, you're regenerating the animacy that's a part of how they tell their stories and how they speak their experience and speak their life. And I think that's how they bring place alive, because for them, place is animate. And it's a continuing daily reminder of the living nature of the world they inhabit. And I think we're bound by the English language in particular is about 80% nouns and about 20% verbs. And native languages, it's the reverse. It's about everything's in motion, everything's moving. And so when we talk about system redesign, the native language for that would be uplifting all. I just learned that this morning, talking to a colleague who does system redesign. He said, when you think of it in terms of uplifting all, it's a whole different perspective. Because then you're uplifting the trees and the plants and the animals. You're uplifting the world, not just one small part of it.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. And I think that really connects to sort of the perspective that we have in transition design. And many of our listeners are actually designers who are thinking about these a little bit, what you're saying, designing for systems change. So we were wondering how do you conceive the concept of design, and what is a message or something you would like to say to designers today who are interested in these topics?
Yeah, I'll begin with a story that has to do with my early experiences of learning how to play the piano. Before I had started piano lessons, it was my playground from the age of two. Whenever I was around a piano, I just went like a gravity pull. Just loved to put my hands in the keys and create out of my own imagination. And so when I was about 8 or 10, or maybe younger, I'm not quite sure of the age, of my age at the time, but My friends and I used to play with these beautiful replicas of tin soldiers. They were magnificently created, very colorful, very imaginative. And they were foot soldiers, and they were horse-drawn regiments, and they're of the old armies of the past, and how they were dressed, and the sense of celebration with the flags waving. And we try to capture all of that on the living room rug on this rainy Saturday afternoon. Well, I sat at the piano and created the soundtrack for the entire unfolding of the activities that are happening on the rug. And one afternoon, I became so engaged in what I was doing that I realized that I was not just playing the piano, I was being played at the piano. And it was a transformative moment. I mean, in some ways, it felt so foreign to how I had been playing up to that point. I became a bit alarmed, like, what's happening? And of course, then my critical mind was activated and it stopped. But from time to time, it would come back. And my life at the piano was an inquiry in how to find those moments when I experienced being played and sustain them for as long as I could. But I think I opened to the possibility that there was more to life than I was learning at school, that I was not only living my life, I was being lived into a particular kind of life. And by being open to the ways in which I was being lived into the world and felt a deeper sense of connection and belonging to the world, it opened the perspective that I write about in The Soul of Place and have taught about and have spoken about in concerts when I was performing music. It in a sense informed my way of seeing the world. So I think I'd open with that story as a way of saying, how do we design and also be designed? Do we find that another voice enters into a co-creation with us, and that we enter into an active correspondence and partnership with the subtle world of being that's around us? Seeing nature, I think, is sort of the intermediary that connects us with this subtle world. There's a whole realm of intelligence or intelligences that we can find ways of corresponding with that can inform the ways that we create a living design.
Thank you. Thank you for that beautiful answer. I think it really relates to not only the work that we are interested in doing as researchers, but also much of the work that undergraduate students are interested in exploring. So, yeah, it opens up really nice avenues for them to think about other ways they can practice design.
I think, Michael, I know we wanted to keep this podcast quite brief, and it's already been so fruitful. I know we maybe didn't complete, or I feel like I'm still kind of interested in following up on this question of I'm curious how you're seeing the world today. You know, are you feeling hopeful? How are you feeling? It's a very, as I mentioned, we all know quite a turbulent time on many levels, but I'm curious to know your outlook on how we go about, but your outlook in general on what's happening in the world, and kind of back to that question on how do we find ways of celebrating when we're still feeling like there's just so much work to be done in creating a more beautiful world.
Yeah, I think there's a sense with the pandemic that the world is dying around us, shutting down. It feels for me that maybe we're just waking up to new possibilities. I think that I remain optimistic, even though you could easily find lots of evidence for the contrary. But I think there's significant changes coming, and I think we may look back to the pandemic as having been not quite sure what the word is, but the awakener, I think, of lighting up a new possibility. And I think it's because it's kind of brought us home to ourselves. Our fridge broke down, our refrigerator broke down, and we went to the big box store down the street to replace it, and we're informed, well, it'd take anywhere from 12 to 16 weeks. You're saying, I mean, we have to live without refrigeration for 12 to 16 weeks. What's happening? Well, everybody's buying refrigerators these days because they're staying home. and remodeling. We're doing things to their home environment. And it's kind of a utility of having a new fridge is an indicator, I think, that people are rethinking what it means to be home and are making their house their home. And so I think we're seeing a move towards homecoming at a global scale. And that's setting the journey into motion. Because then I think we begin to think of our pattern of connection and belonging to our community in a different way, as we're doing here, creating a more active partnership between the Indigenous and non-Indigenous community, and of regenerating new possibilities for how we want to shape and create our future, and how that group offers grounds for celebration. Here we're going to start with the changes we see. We're going to start with celebration. So it can be at the beginning and also at the end. And we can bookend everything we're doing in a spirit of celebration.
I just love that, Michael. I think it's a really beautiful way to reorient the idea of celebration. It's to carry it through all the work we do, as opposed to this finale that may often feel forced, but instead to carry celebration through all the work that we're doing. It's beautiful. Thank you.
I actually think that really connects very nicely to our last question, which we were wondering, we wanted to ask you if you had any great examples, some of the best examples of sort of transitional work that you see happening.
We're involved in some interesting work here in the community, working with the Indigenous community as part of kind of reimagining our relationship together. Because I think there's still much work to do in Canada and other parts of the world in coming into a much deeper partnership with Indigenous communities, where we really see each other as equals, co-creating a future that draws from the deep wisdom that comes from different traditions. And so we've been meeting here in the community quite regularly, now on Zoom with the COVID, but it's still moving along. And it's I've been deeply moved by the meetings, because I haven't personally had opportunities to sit with Indigenous leaders, elders, and storytellers, and to draw from the wisdom that comes from their presence and from their sense of ritual and ceremony. Because we start with a smudge for each meeting and to purify the field for our conversation together. We'd often go around the circle and let each person speak what was sort of moving in their experience. And that sharing was very deep. Often included stories that were wonderful, insights into ways of thinking about the Indigenous experience, and just coming together to sit together, to be in the silences together, to be in the sharing, to hear people speak from an Indigenous speaking practice that has gone back thousands of years. I think is the way of the future. I think as we started this conversation, I said the conversation is the music, is the way we bring music to design. And I think creating conversational spaces is where the insights and where the new design ideas will come from. And speaking not so much from our base of knowledge, but more from what we're inspired by in the moment. What comes to us, because it's an opportunity to make the invisible visible. And I think that's the primary purpose of conversation, is to create a space, a field, to make visible what's sort of in the invisible field of potential that hasn't yet been realized. dialogue is comes from dia logos, which means meaning speaking through, and it's being open to the ways in which words come and find us. We enter into a more dialogic way of being. And our way of entering into design is through a dialogue with the other that reveals invisible truths that are waiting to be revealed.
Michael, it's I think we'd love to speak with you all day and dialogue with you in this conversational space all day. But maybe just to wrap for our listeners, and there's a little baby here in the background who wants to join the conversation.
I just said that in dialogue, you want four generations in the room.
I think we're getting close. We have at least three here.
Yeah, we've got three, for sure.
That's beautiful. I'm for sure three. So hopefully at least one of our listeners is in their very late age. and then we're complete. Yeah, he's excited about that. I'm hearing that again and again, I mean, what you're saying is that the reciprocity, that there's always a relational, reciprocal dynamic, both to design and to be designed, and to think of things and to really live as if all things were animate, and to have that shift in perspective for designers today might be quite important or necessary in doing work that or in becoming and being work that is sustainable and regenerative, to your point. So I just thought to wrap it up, I'm hearing that story is the primary story and narrative, and conversational spaces are what you think is most needed on Earth today. But I'll ask you, maybe because I'm making that assumption just more directly, what do you think humans need to learn or about living on Earth today? What's most needed now for humans and for designers?
I think it's been said that God created humans because he loves stories. So I think maybe stories is at the center of it. We're between stories. The old story no longer serves us, and the new story hasn't yet been born. So I think we're waiting upon the new story. And it's a time of transformation, I think, as we begin with our own story. And I think we're all living a story. I received a message the other day that I have one more book in me to write. Not so much to write, but to speak, which is because I'm having difficulty writing physically at this point. That it's really a story of my own life. It's a beautiful line by the poet Derek Walcott, and from a poem, Love After Love, where he says, sit, eat, feast on your life. I think that's a beautiful and powerful image, the idea of feasting on our life. And in some way, I think we have an opportunity or a call to live the kind of life that we can feast on, that we can when we enter into the later stage of life, look back and feast on all those particular moments and how special they were in hindsight as they made up the pattern that constituted a life, so that our life becomes one that's worth celebrating. And I think if we enter into the stewardship of our own life with an attitude of celebration and gratitude, that we will do right by the world in terms of what we bring to the world. But I think it all begins with story. Begins and ends with story. And that the places we design are telling, are carrying those stories and telling them as well. So we find ourselves in really living and creating a story, the storied universe.
Michael, thank you so much. I think this will just be a feast for our listeners. I think we can leave it at that, unless there's anything else you'd love to add. And I know, you know, the best way to meet with Michael Jones is to really just spend hours in conversation. So trying to, you know, frame this in such a short period of time is not the best, certainly the most, I guess, luscious space for speaking with you. So I appreciate you trying to, you know, help us kind of encapsulate your depth in such a short period of time. I don't know if Sophia, if you have any final comments, or Michael, but we can otherwise, you know.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, no, just saying thank you. Thank you. It was wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks so much. Delightful to hear.
Bueno, acabamos de escuchar una entrevista que tuvieron Sofía y Erika con Michael Jones. Y en esta sección, Alex y yo, Silvana, vamos a darles una síntesis de lo que fue esta conversación y contarles un poco más sobre el trabajo de Michael, que no es tan accesible para la audiencia que habla en español. Alex, ¿quisieras empezar por contarnos un poco quién es Michael?
Claro. Michael es un músico, es decir, pianista, compositor, improvisador y también un autor que escribió el libro The Soul of Place, que se puede traducir como el alma del lugar. Y bueno, Erika empezó la entrevista preguntándole si él podría elaborar sobre la conexión entre su vocación, placemaking, hacer lugar, y el cambio de sistemas. Él explicó que como músico tiene una perspectiva del mundo como armonía que se hace a través de una forma de correspondencia. Y le interesaba cómo esta correspondencia se puede hacer también entre uno y su ambiente, incluso de espacios físicos, la arquitectura y tal. A elaborar un poco más, él explicaba que, por ejemplo, en la arquitectura, un edificio está diseñado por una persona, pero también después el edificio diseña, por ejemplo, las interacciones entre personas que entran. Y a él le interesaba mucho cómo podría traer este entendimiento a su trabajo también de hacer comunidad a donde está él.
Uh-huh. Sí, exacto. Es muy interesante la perspectiva que tiene Michael y las ideas en donde esto nos trae y nos ubica nuevamente en el mundo del diseño por muchas razones. En parte porque tiene una mirada muy amplia desde muchas formas de ver el mundo y de estar en el mundo, en donde incorporan cuestiones que no tienen que ver solo con la razón. Y entonces habla de los patrones y de cómo los patrones se conectan con las energías un poco del universo, y cómo este grado de entendimiento surge a partir de ciertas prácticas, en su caso, como decía Alex, desde la música. En este libro él adopta cuatro lentes para mirar estas interacciones, que son el regreso a casa, la pertenencia al lugar, la regeneración y tener en cuenta el rol de la celebración en todo esto. Y justamente a través de la charla que tuvieron va tejiendo estas ideas desde diferentes ángulos. Quizás podemos primero aproximarnos a algunos mensajes claves que surgen sobre esto, sobre cómo mirar el mundo y en qué sentido se conectan con las ideas que tenemos en Transition Design, sobre justamente formas cosmovisiones, y también con lo que significa trabajar sobre el ambiente construido, como en la arquitectura, pero también en generar espacios e interacciones constantemente. Michael nos habla de una propuesta, una idea de pensar en una gramática. ¿Quisieras contarles a los escuchas un poco más sobre esto, Alex?
Sí, claro. Él explicaba que hay unas perspectivas diferentes de la gramática en que hay idiomas como animados y otros que no son animados. Y eso quiere decir que dentro de la gramática de un idioma, puede ser un enfoque en objetos, nombres, o más en las relaciones entre ellos y los verbos, y así eso se traduce a partir de comunicar y tal, una perspectiva del mundo que está bien conectado y ubicado a todo alrededor de una persona, o por otro lado, que no, que se puede ver el mundo como algo, un objeto para ser construido, como tomado, pero sin alma, sin una energía que se permite, no sé, un concepto de la vida más amplia.
Y uno de los aspectos interesantes que nos cuenta Michael cuando habla de esta gramática es justamente en esta idea de potenciar la acción, los verbos en vez de los sustantivos, las cosas, centrarnos en estas acciones y por ende en las relaciones. Y en esto tiene mucho que ver con el diseño porque también lo propone desde una mirada de constante co-creación. Pero esta co-creación resulta no solo del intercambio de las personas, o sea, de los humanos, y de cómo diseñamos con otros humanos, sino también con no humanos. Y eso es un poco una de las ideas principales que existen ahí. Otro de los puntos interesantes que caen en esta área que nosotros hablamos de forma de pensar y actitud en el marco del diseño para las transiciones es cómo integrar diferentes perspectivas y tipos de conocimiento o sistemas de conocimiento, incluyendo el conocimiento indígena o la sabiduría indígena. Y esto es algo en lo que él tiene bastante experiencia. Y nos da en su charla muchas ideas sobre cómo la importancia del escuchar y del aprender a través de la conversación, él piensa el diseño como una conversación, y a través de las historias y la importancia que tienen las historias en cómo transmiten ciertos conocimientos, a veces milenarios, es fundamental para todos estos procesos. Entonces, en relación a esta idea de cómo él ha aprendido mucho de estos diálogos y conversaciones y de la integración de conocimientos, esto en realidad tiene que ver con su lugar en el mundo y cómo él se ubica en un lugar muy particular que nos describe. Y te pido, Alex, que les cuentes a los oyentes más sobre este lugar en Canadá.
Por supuesto. Me apunte también el nivel de detalle de él utilizó cuando hablaba del lugar donde vive y trabaja. Por ejemplo, explica cómo la forma de los dos lagos en su comunidad al lado de él, uno amplio y profundo, el otro poco profundo y largo, han influido las interacciones de la gente alrededor y también cómo se puede construir su conocimiento de sí mismo. Quizás por un investigador que tiene un enfoque en lugar, este nivel debe ser muy obvio, pero es exactamente eso que no lo ves hoy en día, que hay una desconexión entre la gente y un lugar física, un lugar físico que es en contra de este sentimiento que él estaba escribiendo su libro. Y quiero decir, comentar también que él dio un ejemplo, una historia de un momento transformativo cuando él era joven. Él estaba tocando el piano y se dio cuenta, creo que después, que en aquel momento, cuando él estaba tocando el piano, él no estaba tocando el piano, sino el piano estaba tocando a él. Y aún más, le dio la sensación de haber sido tocado, no solo por el piano, sino por lo más ahí. Y así sentía una conexión con el mundo, y es este sentimiento que él está intentando dar espacio para ocurrir en su trabajo con lugar, y también es este espacio, creo, que se permite un diseñador a tener un impacto súper importante y poderoso por el mundo y para el cambio. Y Silvana, ¿podrías hablar un poco más sobre lo que significa para nosotros, diseñadores?
Sí, exacto. Bueno, justamente siguiendo esta idea, es que él habla de que a través de este aproximarse a entender el mundo y ver el mundo y estar en el mundo de otra forma, lograr esta armonía que él menciona es una forma de traer, y él lo dice textualmente, traer la música al diseño. La forma de fomentar esto, como decíamos, es a través de conversaciones, es a través del diálogo y una especie de flujo, intercambio de aprendizajes que no son solo conocimiento, no es solo algo que se puede decir, sino también lo que se puede sentir. Y por eso es que todos estos conocimientos múltiples, plurales, incluyendo los indígenas, son tan importantes para ser tenidos en cuenta en esto. Ahí es donde hay un potencial para el diseño, en especial porque él lo ve como una forma de conversación, de diálogo, no entre dos cosas, sino como con un espacio de potencialidad amplio, y especialmente en esto de estar dándole forma al mundo, construyendo futuros. Ahí es donde aparece bastante esta idea muy, muy clave, muy importante para él y que es muy importante también para nosotros en nuestro campo. Algo que él habla, que menciona, es que este espacio de generar conversaciones, estos espacios son lugares para abrir la potencialidad y darle espacio a lo invisible, más allá de lo visible. Entonces, justamente trabajar en ese espacio de potencial. Con esto quizás ahí nos deja varias cosas para pensar y muchas conexiones con nuestro campo de trabajo, la forma en la que nos acercamos a estos temas, mucho más para aprender. Y una pregunta final que le hacen, o no es final, pero una pregunta para cerrar, que justamente le hicieron Erika y Sofía a Michael, es cómo ve la situación actual, ya que estamos todavía con la pandemia del COVID-19. Y bueno, él justamente dice que una forma optimista, y él es optimista en esto, es ver cómo el impacto de la incapacidad de movernos nos ha hecho anclarnos más en el lugar, empezar a mejorar nuestras conexiones y vínculos con el lugar, con la comunidad del lugar, y hasta con nosotros mismos, con nnuestra casa y hasta hacer casa, hacer hogar, dedicarnos ya en lo micro y más específico hasta rehacer nuestro propio hogar, nuestros aparatos, nuestro vínculo con nuestro entorno. Y él ve ahí un potencial transformador para nuestra época que deberíamos aprovechar, según él. Así que bueno, esa es un poco la síntesis. ¿Quisieras agregar algo más, Alex?
Si lo interés, podéis encontrar más sobre el trabajo de Michael Jones online por una de sus páginas web, Pianoscapes y thesoulofplace.com.
Muy bien, muchas gracias y nos vemos en el próximo episodio.
Gracias por acompañarnos en Diseño en Transición. Síguenos en Twitter en @theintransition. También puedes visitar nuestro sitio web tinyurl.com/theintransition, donde puedes suscribirte al podcast ya sea en iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify o tu aplicación favorita. Nos vemos en el próximo episodio y ¡que viva la transición!